UK Wine Shows, show number 55. Wine Tours with Mark Hallett from Grape Escapes. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 55 for the 15th of June 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're talking with Mark Hallett from Grape Escapes. While they run tours to the big regions in France, it's Champagne that is most popular. We find out who goes and what they're looking for when they're there. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, how Kodak helps fight wine fraud and how the reduced odds vintage hits reds hardest. But first, a survey commissioned by Yahoo Answers found that 40% of respondents had never tasted English wine. Amazingly, a fifth were completely unaware that wine was produced on these shores at all. Only 1% said they regularly enjoyed a glass of English wine, even though a quarter of those polled said they would prefer to support British goods if they could. Meanwhile, over in Australia, the red grape harvest has been the hardest hit due to problem weather during the 2007 vintage. The drought and frosts, along with bushfire smoke taint, mean the harvest was 35% smaller than predicted, weighing in at 678,000 tonnes. Overall, though, Australia's 2007 vintage fell by 25%. This makes it the lowest yielding vintage for over a decade. It's not necessarily bad news, though, as the shortfall should help balance excessive stock levels from the previous three record-producing vintages. And finally this week, wine fraud is said to affect as much as 5% of wine sold in secondary markets and is an increasing problem for premium wines. To help combat the fraud, Kodak has developed technology that allows producers to protect their bottles by using invisible markers to identify the wine. Several of California's Napa Valley wineries have adopted the technology, which will prevent counterfeiters from duplicating labels and help determine whether a bottle is genuine or fake. That's all in the news this week, but 10 years ago, in 1997, a study by a professor at Colorado State University claimed that moderate wine consumption had no adverse effect on weight gain. The study showed that an intake of up to one-third of a bottle of wine per day with meals had no influence on increasing body weight. This is roughly in line with The Wine Diet by Roger Corder, which was published in January this year, promoting moderate consumption of red wine with food as part of a healthy lifestyle. For more details on this week's stories, check out the news homepage at our website www.3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. Counterfeit wine occurs quite a bit in the wine trade. Given that the value of some of these wines, it's not surprising that counterfeiting is this common. After all, a bottle of wine usually has a label that most printers can copy and produce without any problems at all. And while selling a bottle of wine might be slightly harder than laundering a £20 note, the lack of counterfeiting techniques on the wine makes it fairly easy for anybody to pass off dodgy wine. Let's hope that we see more innovations similar to what Kodak are doing, and perhaps that'll give people some confidence in the wines. Next up, we have the interview with Mark Hallett from Grape Escapes. Hi, I'm here with Mark Hallett, owner and director of Grape Escapes. How are you, Mark?
I'm great, thank you.
We're going to be talking about wine tourism and trips to France.
Perfect, okay.
I think you guys are probably the best people to have a yarn to about this. How many tours do you guys run a year?
We're up to about 250, 300 tours now.
A year?
A year.
Okay, and what areas do you go to?
And the biggest area for us by far and away is Champagne. Mm-hmm. It's the easiest to get to. It's only 2.5 hours drive from Calais, 45 minutes by train from Paris with the new high-speed line. So very easy to get to, very accessible, and it's fun.
Yeah, and it sounds like bubbles.
But beyond that, we do Bordeaux now. There's a lot of demand for Bordeaux. We started off in Burgundy and Loire. We've still got a bit going on there. And we've added the Rhone for this year as well, the Southern Rhone.
Okay, but most of your work's going to Champagne?
85% of our customers and work is in the Champagne area, yeah.
Okay. What sort of person do you guys... Yeah, do you cater to the corporate market, or are you catering to the private groups, or what?
Everything, really. Anyone who wants to go out to Champagne, I guess, is in our core customer market. So we do trips for corporates, we do trips for for social groups, for the odd hen party, stag weekend, birthday party, that sort of thing. And then we do cater for individuals. And so, on individuals, it would be anything from mid to late 20s through to 40s, 50s, 60s. We get a lot of Antipodeans who are working in London on a visa who go out for weekends because they're used to wine tourism back home. So that's a chunk of our younger market. And then, young couples who enjoy drinking, groups of friends away, through to the odd empty nesters. We don't tend to get so many of the real old school drinkers, the pontificators, the ones who like the sound of their own voices and want to tell you about the mulberry and cassis that they can smell and the wet leather and
all that sort of stuff.
And how many vintages of Chateau Lafite are in the cellar back home. It's far more of the free-thinking drinker, those who want to go out and enjoy a weekend, enjoy their wine, enjoy good food, but want to have fun rather than take it too seriously.
No, that makes sense. What sort of prices, for a weekend to Champagne? Is it a weekend or day trips? Do you do both those?
Weekend day trips, it's almost impossible. We do day trips for corporates, mm-hmm. but to do a day trip in Champagne, it requires a private flight out and back. So that tends to put most people off by the time you've paid the £700 or £800 a head airfare. So yes, we get the odd bank or corporate institution that wants to do a day in Champagne, and we'll put that together for them. Generally, overnighters are equally or almost as expensive by the time you've had private shuttle coaches in from the airport to minimise time. It still tends to be fairly pricey. So most of our tours hang around two or three nights.
Is that weekends or do you do stuff during the week?
We do midweek stuff for groups and corporates, but for individuals, it's generally weekends. So our Champagne, it's typically Friday to Sunday or Saturday to Monday on a bank holiday weekend. For other destinations, Thursday to Sunday in Burgundy, Wednesday to Sunday in Bordeaux. But say in Champagne for a weekend, you were mentioning price a couple of minutes ago. Our Champagne weekends start at £224 per person. So that will be travel for, again, because of the proximity to Calais, we tend to include a ferry crossing or Euro tunnel crossing. But we can also do Eurostar if people prefer to take the train. TGV transfers from Paris if people are flying in. It's all about flexibility with us. But so your 224 would include your travel, accommodation, two nights in your chosen grade of hotel. And we offer different hotels. You'll have the named accommodation. If you want four-star, you can have four-star. But obviously at the heart of our tour is the chance to get out, drink and taste. And your day, so for a two-night tour in Champagne, Friday's free for you to do as you choose. Get to the region. We'll give you some restaurant recommendations, tell you the best places to eat, time to relax, enjoy the city, visit the cathedral. Saturday's is the big day. We'll pick you up, start the day in style. You'll have a luxury mini coach, all leather seats, that sort of thing. And our guide will be there to start giving you the interesting insight into the region. Mm-hmm. The bits you're not necessarily going to get from the Champagne houses. For example, how it was that it's the English that invented or first discovered how to put the sparkle in Champagne, and it wasn't Dom Perignon as myth would have us believe.
It was just a bunch of bottles that started re-fermenting in the cellars in England, wasn't it?
Bottles were re-fermenting in the cellars in Champagne, but Dom Perignon was losing 80 or 90% of his bottles to it and didn't know why. Yeah. He was upset at the re-fermentation. It was in England that we first decided if we deliberately put treacle into our still wine from Champagne, it made it bubbly, and that was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were the first ones to do it deliberately.
Oh, okay.
And we had the bottle technology. The glass was stronger in the UK in the 1600s. And that was, I guess, the biggest reason. In France, the bottles were exploding. In Britain, because of the beer industry and things, we had stronger glass, so we could afford to make the bubbles come. So we were there about 20 or 30 years ahead of France by the latest estimates.
Oh, excellent.
But they won't tend to tell you that when you're going around the houses.
No, there's many of them. They certainly didn't mention that when I first started going into Champagne houses.
But so we'll give you that sort of insight. But obviously then straight on to the Champagne tastings, pick up a variety of houses in the day, small and large. But for us, it's all about the quality of the welcome there. We want to find the best houses for our customers to visit. So again, for that reason, we have smaller groups. Typically 12, 18 people is an average group size for us. We don't like going up to 30, 36 people.
Yeah,
it's too many for a good tour. You can't all hear very well. And you're not going to want to ask questions in front of 35 strangers.
So
we have a smaller group, and then it's about people who are going to speak to us generally in English, because that's what all our customers are speaking. Occasionally, if one of the owners wants to come along, if we've got someone who wants to do something very special, then we may have only a French-speaking owner who's going to do some bits and our guide will translate. But in the main, we've got the owners or the marketing director will be speaking to us in English, telling us about their champagne, about their house, how they make it, what's special about their champagnes, and obviously finish off with some champagnes to taste. All of our tours, and for me, the food is almost as important as the wine. As anyone can tell, he's actually seen me.
You're not that bad a shape, mate.
Certainly, the food's important as well. So we choose our restaurants very carefully. We always include a gourmet lunch on each of the tours. So in Champagne, it's a four-course lunch served with champagne appetizers, a Chablis or a Sancerre with the starters, a good claret, a Saint-Emilion or a Pouillac or something with the main course and cheese, dessert, petit fours. It's all about the experience. So the palate is obviously somewhat hindered by the lunch experience, but it's about having a fun day. So we have a good lunch, time to have a short doze on the journey to the next house, wake up refreshed 20 minutes, half an hour later to visit another house, try some different champagnes, maybe some vintage champagnes, mm-hmm. and finally finish with one of the big boys in the industry. But again, we do some tours to Moët, some to Pommery or Veuve Clicquot. One of my personal favourites is Champagne Ruinart. It typifies what's important for grape escapes. It's about the welcome. It's not open to the public, so there's not throngs of people around. We tend to get our tour guides will come out and individually welcome each of the guests in. And that's important to me, about delivering the quality of service, the quality of product that our customers deserve.
I went, when I first got into the wine trade, my wife and I thought, right, we'll go to Loire and then we'll do Burgundy and we'll touch on Champagne on the way home. And by the time we got to Champagne, we thought, right, we'll bang around all the big houses. And to be honest, by the time you'd gone to about three or the four of the big houses, it was all very much of a matchness. And yeah. I did feel like I was on a meat grinder a wee bit.
And you hear the same thing. You see the same thing, you hear the same thing. They tell you the same thing in the same order.
Yeah.
They may have a different flavour. The video will look a bit different, or the corporate presentation will be a bit different.
I can't remember which one, whether it was Mo or whatever, they went on about the three grapes as a palate to make the thing.
That's Mo and Chandon's video at the beginning. Yeah. It's still...
It's a bit tacky.
if it's the only one you're seeing, it's okay. But you're listening to the lovely classical music and watching the painter at work with his painting, it's about the blending of the Chardonnay brings this and brings the elegance and the longevity, and the Pinot Noir brings the
structure.
Yeah, there is a little bit of
okay. So you do one of the big houses.
We do one of the big ones because the cellars are spectacular.
Yeah,
the sheer scale spectacular. To sit there and look at a wall and see maybe 600 or 800 bottles in this wall and see the sign on the front that says 68,000.
Yeah.
And you know that behind that they're 40 or 50 or 60 bottles deep, going right the way back.
And there's
68,000 bottles of champagne just maturing away in there, waiting for the time to come out and be disgorged and drunk.
I quite like the idea. I always think, you know, a lot of the small champagne houses, they don't really get any much recognition, particularly in the UK, where it's, especially if you buy your fizz in the supermarket, it's all about brands and brands and brands. Yeah. But there's some cracking small champagne producers, and it's quite nice that you go and touch on those guys.
I really enjoy them, and they offer superb value. For example, one of the houses that we visit a lot, you're buying Grand Cru vintage champagne. So Grand Cru, the very top of the triangle, the top 1 or 2% of champagne, the grapes are coming from the best villages, and vintage champagnes, all from 1 year, been matured longer in the cellars, and it's like €19 or something. That's £13 a bottle for vintage Grand Cru champagne. It's a steal.
You're going to big houses, you're going to a lot of the small guys. Sounds like, you know, you have a bit of fun as you're going through it. I noticed on your website that you allow to do a bit of abseiling in the houses as well. That's not exactly hoity-toity champagne tasting. What's going on there?
Yeah, we do try and offer a bit of variety. It's good, particularly for the corporate clients and also for the hen weekends and things, just to have a bit of fun in there as well. So yeah, we've got one house, you can abseil 100 feet down into the cellars. We always put that in a morning visit before the tastings, just to make sure
health and safety.
just to make sure our people are listening carefully to the instructions. But it's all fully protected by the abseil or the caving club of F&A look after our guests. So they're all strapped up, double safety lines and things. But it just adds a bit of fun.
Yeah, for
sure. The other thing we do, which is great fun if you've never seen it, is Sobrage.
Yeah.
It's learning the Napoleonic art of taking the top off your champagne bottle using a sabre. And again, it looks extremely impressive as a dinner party trick.
Yeah.
It's really very, very simple. And because of the way it works, everyone thinks you're trying to get the sword to hit the cork and just take a bit of cork off so that it pops out. But in essence, you take the neck of the bottle off as well. Yeah. The pressure inside just blows everything away, the glass and the cork and the top. And all you're left with is a bottle of champagne bubbling over gently in your hands. Get the glass under quick and enjoy it. Okay. So we tend to do these, particularly with luncheons. It's nice to, if you've opened half a dozen bottles, if our guests have all opened a bottle each, they've then got to sit down and drink them with a bit of food and enjoy a nice lunch with some.
I'm sure the afternoon tours are very quick.
You can get some more unusual questions in there.
Okay, so obviously you guys enjoy your trips around Champagne and the various regions. The big market, though, for wine travel and wine tourism in terms of moving people to different regions. But how is it broken up? You know, is it you guys, or is it big, lots of competition? Is it, you know, how is wine tourism industry structured?
There's one big player, Arblaster and Clark, who many of your listeners I'm sure will have heard of. They're the market leaders. They've been doing wine tours for 25 years, and there's no doubt they are. They put a lot of effort into their tours, and they cater for the more mature drinkers generally. I think the average age is certainly older than our clientele, and yeah, the group sizes tend to be a little bit bigger, but they put on MW to look after you. We're certainly the next biggest in the marketplace, picking up a very broad cross-section of people, particularly towards the younger end of the market, those that are looking for it to be a bit fun, a bit more compressed as well. And then there are a few smaller people who are doing one or two tours a year to a region that they know well.
They'll
be guiding them themselves.
Yes, they're more like the enthusiast. Your guides, where do you get your guides from?
Again, it depends on the tours. I guide some of them myself, I enjoy that. But generally, we've got local guides who come in. We've been out there looking for people who are going to be enthusiastic, who know their product. So we've got an Englishman actually living in Champagne, is one of our guides. Otherwise, we've got a lot of French people who've worked in the industry, who have been guides in some of their houses. We've actually got some guides who have worked in the Champagne houses, making the Champagne, doing a few seasons, certainly in the harvest. Lots of them will have done, because that's a lot of work out there anyway. And in other regions, we've got professional tour guides as well. So they've got the regional qualifications to be tour guides, as well as an expertise or passion for the wine. But again, with us, we want the particular knowledge about the wine to be imparted by the wineries as much as by our guides. So we're there. The reason you go on a wine tour is because you want to hear the person who made the wine tell you what's special about it. Otherwise, you could be listening to us doing a podcast on it.
Yeah.
Or you could be... Yeah, it's a bit special. You're doing it to hear the maker say what they do about it and see it in situ, see where they do it, see where the grapes are grown.
It's almost feeling the environment, isn't it?
Yeah, rather than just hearing and tasting, you're hearing, you're tasting, you're seeing, you're smelling. All of the senses are engaged in the evolution of that wine. What made that wine special?
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're a tour operator, aren't you? So I presume all your tours, you've got some sort of protection for people.
Absolutely. It's under UK law, any tour operator has to protect their customers either with bonding, so an ABTA bonding or something like that, or with an insurance policy that the company is insured, or with a trust account. So the means we've chosen is that all our client money is paid into a trust account. It's an independent chartered accountant who releases those funds on the day that our customers return. Unless they're assured that the customers have returned, they won't sign the piece of paper that goes to the bank that gets us paid.
Yeah.
So up until the point they travel, all customers' money is sitting in a trust account. So if we weren't here tomorrow, the money would be there and they would just be able to go to the chartered accountant who's named on our website.
All right. I think we're going to wrap it up there, Mark. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you, Roo.
Cheers. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mark. I've done a reasonable bit of wine tourism myself over the years, cruising around various parts of the world. And I must admit, trips to France have always been a bit of a disappointment. It's certainly not the wines, but most chateaux aren't open to the public. And I think it's essential to get the best out of region, to be organised, and perhaps using someone else's knowledge. If anybody wants to give me any feedback, or has similar or different experiences, you can drop me an email at chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. This week's last word comes from Tom Munro, an Englishman working in wineries in Adelaide. He reckons he enjoys the show. In particular, the shows he's enjoyed a lot are Richard Seeley, the geologist, which I thought were pretty cracking, Matt Skinner, and Jamie Good. Although he reckons that he's getting a bit bored with the old screwcap debate. So I think we can close that debate on closure pretty soon anyway. He's just interviewed a guy called John Haggerty, the boss of one of the UK's top marketing firms, of BBH. After all, John now owns a vineyard in Languedoc and has his Haggerty wines in Odbins. I do like the idea of doing some interviews with people in the marketing area of wine, so that sounds like a bit of fun. I'm going to be running some tasting theatres at the Taste of Bath and Taste of Birmingham, and I've managed to get some complimentary tickets to give away on a first-come, first-served basis. Taste of Bath is from the 28th of June to the 1st of July, and Taste of Birmingham is from the 5th of July to the 8th of July. Just email me at chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk and we'll send a couple of tickets out to you. Next week's show, we're going to be talking to Michael Cox. He is the man behind the Chilean generic body in the UK, and we're going to be talking about Chilean wines in the UK. So until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.